You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The last time Sarah Jessica Parker starred on stage opposite Blythe Danner, she played a dog in A.R. Gurney's hit comedy Sylvia. Now, 18 years later, the two very talented actresses have joined forces again in The Commons of Pensacola, a play written by a fellow actress, Amanda Peet. This time, they're a mother-daughter team, and I'm so pleased to welcome both Blythe Danner and Sarah Jessica Parker to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you for having us. We're thrilled to be here.
Is it easier this time because you're both playing humans?
No. Playing a dog is far easier. A dog with very simple emotional life, much easier, as it turns out.
Have you been in touch over the years? Do you establish some kinds of bonds when you're in a hit play together?
I'm gone a lot. I'm in all over the place, so I haven't seen SJ as much as I would like to. But we bump into each other, and every time we do, we say, we've got to find something to do together. So this was, I actually am very indebted to her, because I'm not sure that I would have been cast in this role if it hadn't been for her.
Why is that?
I don't know that that's true, but I, early on when we were just doing table reads, I said, you know, I know Blythe. We had all assumed that Blythe, A, was very busy. And, I mean, that was the word on the Rialto, was that she was pretty booked. And I just didn't want to assume that she would be interested. But I pretty much said to Lynn and Amanda, like, I would love to at least get this script to her and get her thoughts. And because I kept imagining Blythe imagine what it might be like to play opposite her again, especially in this role.
Now, when you say Lynn, you're talking about Lynn Meadow, is the artistic director of the Manhattan Theater Club.
And our director.
And Amanda Peet, who is the writer of this play, who could have starred in it herself, couldn't she?
She most certainly could have, yeah. But I think, I'm grateful that she was generous enough to decide not to, but also I think a first-time playwright, they would probably say that it's time best spent working on the play during the rehearsal process, you know, that trying to figure out how to play Becca and, you know, pay attention to the dramaturg work is maybe something you can eventually do, but right? Would you say, Blythe?
Yeah, I think that it's hard even if you've been doing it for years, because it's such an intense process, and everybody comes with some ideas, and a wonderful playwright will be open to those as well.
Well, I've always wondered about those actors who direct their own films.
Well, film, I know. That's more difficult.
There's always the possibility that you would have gotten a better performance from somebody else.
Perhaps, yeah.
But you were working things out in rehearsal, especially with a first-time playwright.
And a new play. Mm-hmm. So a lot of work. I mean, appropriately, a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. But have you been doing a lot of theater work recently? I know, Sarah Jessica, you have not.
Not that recent. The last thing I guess I did in New York was suddenly last summer.
Which did nice work if you can get it on
I'm
Broadway.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
With my husband.
How could I forget that? Well, I don't consider that work. That was a complete lark.
Some large dessert course.
Exactly. I didn't have to get there till after dessert. I think they picked me up at 9 o'clock, and I had 7 minutes on stage, which was just heaven, watching Matthew Cavort and the whole group. It was a joy.
Is it scary doing a new play? Because you're really creating the characters for the first time.
Yeah, it is in a way because
it is in a way, but
it is. You are working with the woman who, in this instance, created the character, and you also don't know. Just like when you start a new project with other actors, you're never sure what they're going to be like. Are you going to get along? Is the chemistry? Which is what was so wonderful about working with Sarah Jessica.
But I will say, there is something. There's a lot of. It's in some ways. I almost preferred the experience of a new play because there was no blueprint from which everybody was judging. There was no point of reference. Mm. You know, I've done so many revivals, and it's impossible, even people's best efforts, to get other performances and other productions out of their head. And so there's a constant state of comparison. And this, for me, was liberating in a way, as hard as this part is, because we had to figure out who she was. There wasn't, you know, I wasn't looking at some remarkable actor's performance somewhere embedded deep in the past and having that sort of hang over us, or me specifically.
Well, you seem to be very affectionate with each other, so was it not that big a stretch to play a mother and daughter on stage?
Not for me.
Or for me.
She's really too young to be my mother.
Although, no, I'm not.
Although this is a bit more complicated than a normal relationship, because the story has definite echoes of the Bernie Madoff situation. Mm-hmm. Blythe, your character Judith is forced into reduced circumstances in Florida, down at the heels, yet somewhat accepting of it. But she's surprisingly free of self-pity.
Well, that's really what drew me to this, is, you know, as well as Sarah Jessica and the other elements involved. I love that. I can't stand to play women who are full of pity, and I think. Part of that, too, comes from having worked for many years up at the Williamstown Theater Festival with Nico Sakharopoulos, who always used to say, "Don't feel sorry for yourself." No matter, that's a terrible Greek accent.
But no matter, I got it.
No matter who you're playing, Chekhov or Williams or Shaw, he said, you must never, it's so unattractive to the audience. You know, it's being stalwart and courageous and beating the odds that makes a surprise of that, too, and a woman that might be have pity or self-pity. I think sometimes you feel the audience feels more pity for someone who doesn't pity themselves.
Well, Judith is a little rough around the edges.
Oh, yeah.
Did you do any research? Did you watch footage of Ruth Madoff?
I did. Yeah, I was fascinated and tried to get a little bit of her queens in there, which actually helped me because, you know, she is rough. I mean, some of the languages, and I find it so liberating. I can't wait to get out there and just rip into her and say things that my mother would never let me say or behave in a way that, you know, that would be unacceptable to her. So I love it. I feel ferocious and free and very happy. And
at one point early on in previews, because I didn't see this in rehearsal because we weren't using the props in the same way that you do once you're kind of really in the thick of figuring it all out, and I looked over in the top of the play, and I saw Blythe stick her beautiful pinky deep in the back molar of her mouth.
No, I did.
To pick a nut out, and I thought, well,
was it not really stuck
wonderful?
There?
No,
she does it every night. It's
my
wonderful.
My mother used to do that. My mother was a very beautiful, sort of elegant, very complicated lady, but I always marveled at the fact that she would take her little nail.
So how did you become so ladylike?
Well, I don't know that I'm so ladylike.
Yes, you are.
You saw the play.
But you know, when I see that kind of business, I always wonder, because years ago we had Meryl Streep here, and I complimented her on an early production I'd seen her in at the PAP, in which she unwrapped a cough drop. And it was just such a perfect piece of business for the character. Mm. And she said, "Oh, I think I had a sore throat that night."
But that stuff is that's that's the best part of all, I think, of having time and, you know, playing in a real, not a sort of a period. Well, I mean, that business is really interesting to work on, too. But this sometimes feels like a documentary. So we get to figure all that out, all that little tiny business that adds up, I think, in a great way. It's some of my favorite things.
My guests are Sarah Jessica Parker, plays Becca, and Blythe Danner, who plays Judith in Amanda Peet's new play called The Commons of Pensacola. It is in its, it's just received a 2-week extension, and it'll be running till Sunday, February 9th at the Manhattan Theater Club at New York City Center on West 55th Street. And if you want ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. Sarah Jessica, wouldn't you say that Becca has a number of mixed motives for visiting her mother?
I would say yes. I would say she doesn't even travel with the conviction, you know, that those motives require. I think she's really ambivalent about what she thinks she wants from her mother and how to achieve it, because it doesn't really marry well with her involuntary reaction to her mother, you know, which is to protect her and defend her and love her despite kind of everything that's served up.
Well, there's a sibling rivalry on top of it all, and then there's that boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a kind of a boyfriend that's inappropriate for her beyond him being too young, which, you know, one can argue for or against, I don't know. But I think it's more who he is that really doesn't suit Becca, but it makes her feel good. I think what I've, you know, there's a lot I love about doing this play, but one of the things I'm thrilled about and terrified every night is that so much happens so quickly in this play. It's short, and there's big jumps you have to make and transitions that have to be made off stage. And there's this sort of seemingly kind of this souffle, this light, overly joyous, spirited person that exists that doesn't really have anything to do with the reality of Becca's life that is really bleak and filled with despair, and she's floundering and rudderless. And when all that kind of comes to be revealed, it's really hard, but we have all this that we get to do in advance of, and then when we arrive there, it's just that much more interesting for us to do.
I was afraid you were going to give us a couple of spoilers, but you were very clever there. What do you think Carrie Bradshaw would make of Becca? Because they are really quite different.
I think she would probably feel I think she would feel tenderness toward her. I think she would be sad for the predicament in which she finds herself and mostly would wish that she had more control of her life and was better at making choices.
Having played these parts, do you look at the Madoff situation any differently?
I look at it with more sympathy for Ruth, certainly, than I did. Initially, I was very ambivalent about it all. But
it's the way Amanda has written it as well.
Yes.
She's kind of reticent about what actually happened, who's guilty, and what occurs before the last scene. So do you have to work certain things out for yourself?
Yes. And actually what's interesting, to keep it fresh, I often make different choices. I have different opinions about it on certain nights where I'll find that she may be hiding more than she's allowing. Other nights, absolutely not. I mean, you have to come up with, even though this is a wonderful play, as an actor, I find I have to kind of go out on a limb every so often and to juice it up a bit, you know.
So then you have to react, the other actors have to react to the changes in the way Vlad is playing it?
Yeah, but that's exactly what you would hope for, because I think as humans we make decisions and we, you know, we think if I could go back in time, boy, would I choose to do something entirely differently, or I don't even really believe in what I did, or, you know, you get righteous about a point of view and you know, Blythe does it differently. You know, Allie, who plays my sister, who comes at that pivotal moment and really stirs the play up, she's wonderfully, you want someone to be different with you every night. It's the best thing in the world. It's the virtue of being live.
It's Allie Marsh.
Yes.
Well, on the other hand, there have been those actors who say you work it all out in rehearsal and then you do it. Laurence Olivier, you do it the same way every night. Other actors think that's absolute insanity.
Mm. But I think there is some of doing it the same every night. I think the rehearsal process allows you to feel confident enough to start changing it. We are doing the same thing every night.
Well, you're saying the same words.
But the depth, you would hope that you become deeper. I mean,
yeah, I think we do. I think we dig every night. I always like to think that even up till the very last performance, we'll find something we have never found before. We'll hear somebody will just have another tonality in a word or a sentence, and it will trigger. It's like playing ball, you know. You'll catch it differently. You'll throw it differently. It's what makes it exciting, and the audience contributes.
How is the rehearsal process when the playwright is also an actor? Is she responsive to your input?
I think she was very responsive. There were many things that we did just fooling around. I mean, by accident, just completely being not even trying to improvise, just goofy one day and decided to faux slap Michael. And she said, oh, keep that. I said, really? I'm just being nutty. So, yeah, it was very nice to feel so welcomed with our some of our ideas.
I understand that you had audience talkbacks. How did they respond to both of you, your characters?
I think that they had all, kind of every opinion you might imagine. Some people felt that, you know, Allie was too unforgiving. She couldn't see the nuance. It was too black and white for her. My sister in the play played by Allie Marsh. Some people, you know, a lot of people, it was interesting, said I, too, would have kept some of that money. I really, as mm-hmm. much as I want to be some principled person, the truth is, as Judith's character is alleged, has kept some of the money. And people were sympathetic to that, to a life beyond without a husband, without a family. What do you do to survive? So people
she
had
wasn't
every opinion.
In on the scheme anyway.
Mm, no.
And she makes an argument in the play that, you know, she inherited money, and that money she gave right. to her husband to invest. And so she can reason, or she can legitimize, and some would agree and some would not.
It was interesting. So many people were kind of riveted on the money issue, and you were so eloquent and wonderful when you came back and said what it was really about. Remember that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the money part is very fun for people to talk about, and it's provocative, but the truth, to me, the play is really about love and betrayal and disappointment and, you know, who we want our parents to be, who they really are capable of being. You know, what point in our life do we take responsibility for where we find ourselves? Are we complicit in our disappointments? How long do you blame somebody else? You know,
how long
those,
do you blame your parents?
How long do you blame your parents? And I think that's a real issue for people.
I'm
and
still
I,
trying to work that
oh
one out.
Oh, my God. It's
yeah.
awful.
and I think blame is then, you know, that ability to blame is informed by the success you have in your life. You know, people that have a lot of success can let the blame go more easily because they have more contentment in their life and they have more it's all such a personal experience. Mm-hmm.
Sarah Jessica, you've been really busy, but you haven't been acting much since you were here for the second Sex and the City movie. Have you missed the acting?
Yeah, very much. I mean, I have, but I don't know what I've been doing. I can't remember. I have been acting
been
a little bit.
And
full-time
yes.
mother.
I've done a couple movies, children. But I can't remember what they are since then. Yeah, I do. I miss it, but I think it's, you know, I have three children and I feel still a great desire. First of all, they really all like me right now, and I know there's going to come a point where they don't. And while I am in their good graces, I actually enjoy being there, and doing a play has been hard on them because I'm absent at the most important moments, which is bedtime, really, and the morning. I mean, sometimes I just have to get a little bit of sleep. But I found doing this play with Blythe and this cast and having had this amazing, extraordinary experience with Lynn, that it has reminded me of who I am in a lot of ways, you know. And
theater is what actors who have started in the theater tell me they always want to return to, because I guess that's where the real thrill is.
Yeah.
Because it is different every night,
well,
because you're working before
also,
an audience.
I love a quote that Mercedes Rule has said about the theater. And she said that it's the one that is the hardest, and the one that pays the worst, and the one that we love the most, because it is you have the power, and she says the priestly power, to connect with other breathing people in the room. And she said theater started in a temple, and worship, and there is a vibration to it. And I think that's true. Not to sound, I mean, I don't think she meant it to be other than, you know, not making it anything grander than that. But there is something to it. There are nights when you feel the audience is just breathing with us. And
I understand it completely as somebody who does live radio. You can do tape shows and you can fix everything up. That's like making a movie.
Yeah.
Or you can do it live, and sometimes you even make mistakes, but it's okay because that's all part of the process. And if you recover, that's even better.
That's even better. I mean, yeah, I think it's hard to describe to people why the experience, even in a smaller house like we're having, can be so meaningful. And also, you know, artistically fulfilling, but also can make you different as a human being. It's hard to express, but I think it makes you more in touch with somebody else who you don't even know. And something nice also about having this experience is that we've met people who have said to us, "I've never seen a play before." You know, when you don't have that experience in the movies and in television, because it's so much a part of our lives, that kind of media, and it's such a nice experience, so gratifying to share it daily. Mm.
But you have hinted that you might want to do another Sex and the City film.
Well, I think what I meant to say, and I don't even remember how that conversation started, was that
in style,
I know that there is a story that exists. Whether or not we tell it is beyond me, and I'm not being cagey. I just don't know that we will ever do it, if we will feel the time is right, or that we all want to tell that story at the same time. That's the extent of which there's been any conversation of a third movie.
Well, since Carrie was obsessed by shoes, is it fitting that you're also working on a shoe collection?
I suppose some might connect those dots. I got to play this person who I love very, very much, and I think I wore more shoes as an actor than almost anyone ever wears as an actor. You know, typically we wear one or two or three pairs of shoes, but there was a relationship as if the shoes were an appendage and some other necessary body part for Carrie. And so I learned an enormous amount about shoes and construction, and I liked them before then. And I'll tell you very quickly, when I was a little girl, we went to the shoe store twice a year, and it was such a big deal. And I always remember the feeling of walking into a shoe store. First of all, it was air conditioned, which to me was such a luxury. And you could smell the leather. You know, these, mm-hmm. even though we had no money, we always had Buster Brown shoes, mm-hmm. you know. And I would go as my sisters and brothers were choosing their pairs, and I would pick up every pair of shoes, and I would put my nose inside the shoe, and I couldn't get over how wonderful it smelled, and the stitching and the red, the cordovan versus the apple red versus the lollipop. Like, wow. I loved them, and it was such a big deal for us. And then we had to polish them ourselves every Sunday.
And Blythe, you've had a kind of an odd career in which you've done two different Sylvias.
Odd.
You've done two different
yes,
Sylvias. First, you did the Sylvia with Sarah Jessica, mm-hmm. and you also did a Sylvia with your daughter, mm-hmm. Gwyneth.
I did, indeed. Yes, we made that right after my husband Bruce died, and it was very healing for both of us to fly to New Zealand and to be able to, I think it's one of her most extraordinary performances.
Did you draw upon that experience of becoming a widow in thinking about the character Judith?
Oh, yes, yes, very
suddenly
much so.
Suddenly alone without
her
husband?
Yeah, very much
husband.
So. Mm-hmm.
You've also been doing working with Robert De Niro in the Meet the Parents series.
That's
that
another dessert
fun.
Job. Yes.
So what comes after the play closes on February 9th?
I'm actually going to make a little indie, an independent film about a woman, again, who's a widow. And it's actually very, very nice little film about someone who's going through widowhood and meets someone else. And there's a journey there that's very interesting to me. And then I'm going to play a little part in a film with Rebecca Hall playing her mother, and Kazikas. What is that boy? Sudeikis.
Mm-hmm. Jason Sudeikis.
Thank you. Is that his name?
I don't know.
From
maybe.
Saturday Night Live?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so
Jason Sudeikis, I think is his.
Yeah, a little part in that. And, but yeah, I just wanted to say something about how much it means to me, not only to be sharing the stage with this exquisite creature, because she is. I have to be so grateful to her for this experience. But something about getting older, I'm really driven and sort of pleased that I seem to be getting better roles now that I'm 70.
Well, playing mothers.
I even played a great-grandmother in a film not long ago. I don't mind that at all. Just the work is what's important. But there's something about getting older. You know, and I read this in The New Yorker years ago. It said that growing... The reason that it's always a surprise, even though you expect it, you don't really feel, you know, if you're doing the things you want, the age that sounds so old. but that it's the last, the people that do, the reason people sometimes really do get kind of thrown by it is the last stage of life. And there's not another stage after this stage. And then, and there's also no looking back. I mean, you can't look, you know, it's not an age.
Well, you can write your memoir.
That you look back on, except at least not on this earth.
Sarah Jessica, quickly.
Yes.
You have something coming up?
Oh, I have recitals with children and all sorts of school events. And our school is, Sitting Country is about to celebrate its 100th anniversary, our centennial. So we're working on that. And I have lots of, we're producing a bunch of stuff.
And there's the shoes.
And there are the shoes.
Sarah and Jessica many meals Parker to cook. Plays Becca Blythe Danner Judith in Amanda Peet's The Commons of Pensacola. It is in a 2-week extension running through Sunday, February 9th at the Manhattan Theater Club at New York City's Center Stage. That's 131 West 55th Street. For ticket information, go to our show page at wnyc.org.